And our second lesson this morning comes from the 12th chapter of the Gospel of John, the first 8 verses. Listen again for God's word to you. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus, who he had raised from the dead. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, the one who was about to betray Jesus, said, "Why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, he kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She brought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it, and as she finished her cry, she attended to her cheeks with a powder rag. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 to buy a gift for her husband, Jim. She had been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses had been greater than she calculated. They always are. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed just to make him pluck his beard with envy. On went Della's old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat, and with a whirl of skirts and the brilliant sparkles still in her eyes, she fluttered down the stairs to the street. Where she stopped, a sign read, "Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds." One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. "Will you buy my hair?" asked Della. "I buy hair," said Madame. "Take your hat off and let's have a sight at the looks of it." Down rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a practiced hand. "Give it to me quick," said Della. Oh, the next 2 hours drift by on rosy wings. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present. She found it at last. It was surely made for Jim and no one else. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design. It was even worthy of the watch. $21 they took, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way to a little prudence and reason. She got out her curling iron and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. The door opened and Jim stepped in. His eyes were fixed on Della. There was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It wasn't anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold it because I couldn't live through Christmas without giving you a present." "You cut off your hair?" said Jim. You needn't look for it, said Della. It's sold, I tell you, and gone too. Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della, drew a package from his overcoat pocket, and threw it upon the table. White fingers tore at the string and paper, and then an ecstatic scream, for there lay the combs, the set of combs, side and back, that Della had worshipped for so long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs of pure tortoiseshell with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful vanished hair. Jim had not seen his beautiful present. She held it out for him upon her own palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. Isn't it dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it. Dell, he said, let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use right now. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And so now suppose you put dinner on. O. Henry, the writer of this short story called The Gift of the Magi, adds a postscript. The Magi, you know, were wise men. They invited the art of giving Christmas presents. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Everywhere they are the wisest. They are the Magi. Well, had Judas, that betraying disciple of Jesus, been told this touching story at the dinner party he attended with Jesus at the house of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, I don't think he would have agreed with O. Henry. Wasteful, extravagant, impulsive, and misdirected would have been his words about Della and Jim. That certainly was his response to what Mary did that evening. She had a pound of very precious and very expensive fragrant ointment, and with it Mary anointed Jesus' feet. As with Della and Jim, was this an extravagant act of love or an extravagant act of waste? Jesus gratefully accepts her gift, yet Judas jumps in to make it clear where he stands. Why was not this fragrant oil sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? 1 denarii was equal to a day's wage. 300 were almost a year's wages. Expensive oil, indeed. In light of Judas's question, Mary's gift does seem a little misdirected. Why give such expensive oil to Jesus? Why waste all that money on a simple gift? Why not give it instead to those who really need it? Putting aside the issue of his true motivation for asking, Judas may just have a case here. In Matthew's version of the story, all the rest of the disciples at the dinner party agree with Judas. The poverty in Palestine in those days was a grim and dreadful fact. There was gross overcrowding and horrible housing and fierce competition for a job and not a little unemployment, as Jesus himself makes plain in his parables and in his ministry. And there were many poor, some of them so poor that what they wore was all they owned. A year's salary, which was what that perfume was worth, may not seem like much money, and not much could be affected with it. Yet something constructive and faithful could be done with it. And here was this foolish woman wasting it for no end or point at all, and in a simply idiotic fashion. So it seemed to Judas. You know, that issue is still with us. How much money do we spend on ourselves, and how much do we spend on others? Buildings, sanctuary furniture, landscaping around the church. Doesn't it all seem a little too extravagant, wasteful, and self-serving? Why not just sell it all and give it to the poor? Maybe Judas is right. But Jesus didn't think so. The poor will always be with you, he said, throwing his protective kindness around Mary, who must have been sadly taken aback by Judas's attack on her. But you do not always have me, he says. Let Mary keep her ointment. She may help to prepare me for my burial with it. Such honor did Christ offer her, although it was two men to whom it finally fell. It is easy to construe that the church is no more than a social service agency, no different from the Rotary Club, in which it seeks to help others. But Mary offers us, I think, a much-needed reminder. Christ is the center of our life in the church, the one we worship, the one who has modeled for us all God's extravagant, costly love. Mary's perfume had that heavenly scent about it, the aroma of divine extravagance. Incidentally, Jesus is not telling his disciples here to neglect the poor. This statement to Judas has often been misunderstood and used callously to justify our insensitivity and lethargy towards those who are in need. Jesus himself lived in nomadic poverty, as did his closest disciples. And of course, the Gospels are filled with vignettes about his concern and concrete acts of love towards those who were outcast and rejected by the rest of society. Mary is the subject of his attention at the moment, and he doesn't want to let Judas's callous disregard for her sensitive and loving gift go unnoticed and unappreciated. The needs of the poor will always be with us, but look at what Mary has done, Jesus seems to suggest. I am grateful for her special gift. There is a remarkable scene in the middle of the movie, The Young Victoria. Victoria, in her early 20s, is now Queen of England and Great Britain. Her childhood and youth have been rigidly controlled. She has been reared to be the queen. She has been trained and schooled in every appropriate word to speak and gesture to make. She cannot descend a staircase without her hand properly placed in the hand of a lady in waiting. And then she falls in love with Albert, a German prince. After a very proper and controlled courtship, they marry, at least for political reasons. But in the process, though, they fall in love, wildly, passionately in love. My favorite scene in the movie happens in the middle of a horseback ride. They are caught in a rainstorm. They stand under a grove of sheltering trees, waiting patiently. There are probably no rules of etiquette for how to handle this, but then something out of the ordinary happens. They look in each other's eyes, and love simply overcomes restraint and control, and they hold hands and they run out into the rain across a soggy field laughing. And Albert falls down in the mud. The Queen of England and her prince consort covered in mud. How sad to live your whole life and never have loved so deeply that you did something so foolish, so extravagant, that it makes you blush to think about it. How sad to have lived your whole life without ever throwing caution to the wind and doing something wonderfully outrageous for the other you love. How sad never to have loved so much that you would have given everything, your life itself, for the sake of it. Such is the case for Jesus. And perhaps for us as well. O. Henry's Della and Jim, was what they did for each other wasteful, extravagant, impulsive, and a little misdirected? Perhaps. Was it the right thing to do? You bet. Amen.